Hi, Mark.
Hi, Nicole.
How you doing today?
Not too bad, not too bad. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. It's sunny in Vancouver.
Perfect. It's dark and rainy in Innsbruck. It's actually very shitty weather here.
I will send you my sunshiny vibes.
At least something.
Exactly.
It's 5 o'clock. Thanks, everyone, for joining. There are people just popping in right now. So I would say we just kick it off with the organizational part. Would you like to take over?
Yeah, let's go. So, usually we just say hi to everybody and everyone gives us some questions but doesn't really interact. So today we thought you could all interact a little bit and get a sense of who is listening in today. So just a quick little exercise. You can pop open a chat window there in Zoom, and we'd love it if everyone could tell us what their job title is and what country they're working in. And then you can all get a sense of where everyone is in the world, and maybe find some friends or make some new ones.
Great. While we are doing that, so your job title and the country where you're from,
And
just to
your
kick it
last
off.
name won't show up. So just your first name will come up.
Perfect. We have a topic this time, and we actually want to kick off with South Africa, Guatemala, Czech Republic. That is amazing. That is, wow, I did expect
Yes,
that.
I know. They all sound more exotic than Canada to me.
Or Austria. Well, it all always depends on the perspective, eh?
Exactly.
So we thought we kick it off because with a topic on the SDGC, which is the Service Design Global Conference. A few weeks ago, we've been there. We did a workshop there, and we spent 2 days with the global service design community in Toronto, in Canada, for the first time. We thought it might be nice to kick that off while people are just popping in and entering your job title and your country, sharing a little bit our perspective of what we take away from the conference, what we did there. And I would actually like to ask you, Nicole, the first question. So the conference was in Canada for the very first time, and you're Canadian, you're based in Vancouver. How was it for you to attend the conference in Canada, and what was your Canadian perspective there?
It was awesome, and I was really excited. So it's only 2 years ago that the Canadian chapter of the Service Design Network started doing a conference. So it's only, or rather, 3 years ago that we had a service design conference happening in Canada at all. And that first year was a one-day little conference. It was small, it was great. And then the second year was 2 days, and it was even better. And we saw the maturity grow significantly. And then so to hear that we were going to be hosting in Canada for this year was, it was just really exciting. It felt like growing up fast. And then it was just really great to be there and to see, you know, all of my Canadian service design friends and see what everyone's been doing and how they've been learning and growing over the year. But then combine that with the maturity that comes from Europe and some other countries, which tend to be a little further ahead than us here. So it was a really beautiful mix.
I would challenge, by the way, that other countries are ahead of you. I think we saw some great example that this is actually not true. And for the very first time at a service design conference, I saw that the whole audience gave standing ovations to actually a Canadian speaker. I think that was a very emotional moment. I really liked that.
That was a highlight talk. So for anybody who hasn't who wasn't there, it was a woman named Zita Cobb, who is from Fogo Island, Newfoundland. And they built a beautiful hotel there, and she did a talk about design in service of place, I believe was the title, or something along those lines. Very close to my heart because I'm from Newfoundland, and she talked a lot about the history of the people there. And so I shed tears quite a few times, but found out after that many people did. And we're actually having a little viewing party of that talk here in Vancouver at the end of November so that people who missed it can see it, because it was something else, wasn't it? It was spectacular.
Very nice. It was. And I think one thing came clear there. It doesn't matter how you call what we're doing. She never called it service design.
She's an accountant.
She did it. Yeah. I think that's something we see in many organizations. People don't call it service design, but they do it. Mm-hmm. And once they find out that this term service design exists and that a whole community around it exists, a whole body of knowledge around it exists, it's like opening the door to a family and to a community. And for me, the Service Design Global Conference actually really is like a family gathering every year. And that's really the nice thing, that we meet the community there since 2008. That was the very first global service design conference taking place in Amsterdam. Since then, every year, it's the same thing. I'm actually blown away that people from Spain, Germany, Florida, US, New York City, France, Brazil are here. That's great.
Yeah.
Let's kick it off with sharing some stuff what we did at the conference. So for the first time, there were some site events for the conference, and we hosted one of those site events in a beautiful space in Toronto. And we did a 3-hour workshop, a 3.5-hour workshop on journey map ops and so journey map operations, which is a system, a framework that helps organizations to manage multiple agile projects, to manage an agile organization. It actually is in a different dimension to journey maps. I thought we start today with just like a 5-minute intro of that topic as a kind of teaser, because we actually got a lot of requests from folks to talk more about that. And I would like to dedicate a whole webinar around this. So the next webinar will focus solely on journey map operations. But for now, I just want to share a few of this slide. So I'm sharing my screen right now. This is actually my keynote presentation that I used during the workshop. And I just highlighted a few things really here, which I think is quite interesting to look at. There is always, when you talk about journey maps in organizations, particularly if you start embedding service design, you start scaling service design, or however you call what we're doing, at some point, people will talk about journey maps, but actually they mean a different thing. And one reason for that is that there are different use cases of journey maps. So on the left-hand side, you have the workshop maps. Workshop maps are used within workshops. So these are co-created tools that you use, for example, as a research method, where you invite real customers, real users, real frontline staff, and you co-create a map together. It's very often the case that you just take a photo of the map, or you take down like the key insights of it, but you don't actually progress these maps any further, and you don't use them outside of a workshop. You only take some insights out of it. The second use case are project maps. So these are journey maps that are used within a project. So they actually serve as a boundary object connecting different disciplines, different teams, different parts of the organizations, different silos, if you'd like to say, but they are only used within a certain project, and hardly they're used after a project. So that can be that an in-house team does it, an in-house agency or external agency does it. Often you have these maps in many different formats. Some use Microsoft Excel or PowerPoint, others created beautiful ones with InDesign or something like that, and you keep it as a PDF, but they are hardly used after a project. So the third kind of maps is rather what we focus on in this workshop, which is using journey maps as a management tool. And these are maps that live on beyond single projects, which actually help you to connect different projects. And to really understand that, so a lot of conflicts in organizational misunderstanding happens from the fact that some people talk about journey maps as workshop maps, while others talk about it as project map, and others actually refer to it as management maps. So clarify what are you talking about when you talk about journey maps in organizations. And by the way, while I'm talking here, please use the time to post questions, any kind of question that you have in our chat. We will go through the questions right after my brief intro.
Yeah, and make sure when you post your questions that you post them so everybody can see. So I think I forgot to mention that when we shared our jobs and our countries. So some of you maybe can only see a couple of things, and that's because perhaps only us as moderators can see it. So make sure you ask your questions to everybody. You can just change that there at the bottom.
Perfect, thanks for reminding. So one thing to consider when you do your journey maps is what kind of information do you show? Is it a product-centered map or is it an experience-centered map? I'd like to share one example for that. If you think of an airport experience, you can think of the entire airport experience from how do you find the airport? How do you get there? How's the check-in? How's navigation at the airport? How's going through security check and so on and so forth. If you only focus, for example, as an airline on your touch points, so on the steps of a journey that is under your control, you only see parts of the journey because you only look at the parts that you are in control of. But if you compare those two, you actually see that if you look at the whole experience, you get really a feeling for the entire experience. You can slip into the shoes of customers. You might not have control over, for example, security check. But just being aware of that there is a security check means that you can prepare towards that. You can prepare maybe your customers for that. You can point towards the security check which has the least waiting time. You can manage expectation, help your customers to navigate easier. But this only works if you are aware of that. And whatever data you put on a journey map, your organization will become aware of. If you leave it out, they're not aware of it, and probably you won't see Project Horizon for that. So it's a strategic decision. What kind of maps do you do? Do you focus on the whole experience, an experience-centered map, or do you focus on a product-focused map, which only shows your touch points? The last thing I wanted to share are the different levels of a journey map. So you have different scope levels, different zoom levels, if you like to say. And I always like to compare a journey map with a map in geography, where you can zoom in and zoom out of it. You can zoom out and take a look at the whole world, where you don't see a lot of details, but you get a good overview for everything. And then you can zoom into a country, zoom into a city, and suddenly you see more details appearing. If you want to drive from one city to another one, you need both kinds of maps. You always need the bigger picture and the zoom in picture. So in journey maps, if we stay with the airline example, you might start with a high-level journey map, kind of the customer life cycle. But then you can zoom in into any step, like the airport experience, and create a sub-journey for this step. You can do that not only for one step, but for all the steps at the same time. By that, you actually build a hierarchy of journey maps. You start building a repository of your maps. You can then zoom in even further. So if you focus on the airport experience, you can zoom into any step there and create new journeys for that, micro journeys or sub-level journeys there. So you build out a whole repository of your maps. And you shouldn't do that as a project, like let's capture the whole experience as it is and build hundreds of maps. But doing over projects, if you think not only within your own projects, but if you see a project always as a step towards building your repository, you can build up this repository over time. You can connect journey maps with each other, particularly if you use a digital tool, and you can add the research data to a journey map, which helps you to build a repository of your research data and actually find it later on again. So instead of doing research again and again and again, you can stand on the shoulders of giants and stand on the research of previous projects that maybe a different department conducted, so you're not aware of it. But if you use one tool for that to connect everything, then you can find it. So in our workshop, we went on to actually talk about the whole system around it, the customer-centric management tool. And this is what we're going to focus on in our next webinar. But now, back to the questions you have.
Okay, so let's see if people have started asking questions. Not yet, but everyone, please feel free. This is the time to to share your questions with us and hopefully get some good answers. And again, when you ask, make sure you make sure everyone can see your question, because maybe they'll want to build on that.
Perfect. However, we received some questions already by email. Maybe we start with one of those.
Yeah, why don't we start with one of those? Okay, I have the list. Would you like me to feed you one, Mark?
Yes, please.
Okay. In your experience, what is a very typical thing that many organizations mess up when looking at their CX?
I would actually recommend to read to buy the latest issue of Harvard Business Review, because that is on the topic of what is the biggest issue. The biggest issue is that organizations always try to quantify customer experience, to measure it, using stuff like a Net Promoter Score, for example, and then focus only on these KPIs, and very often not on a set of KPIs or cross-silo KPIs, but they pick a single KPI for customer experience. Like they say, we just take the NPS for the entire organization, and that's it. What happens then actually is that you see a lot of projects arising that try to impact the KPI, but actually not customer experience. I always like to share the story of my car dealer here. I drive a very traditional German brand car. And at some point I was wondering why now my car dealers has posters all over the stores showing like 5 stars and our service is your 5 stars and so on. And the result for that, when I talked to, because they're a client of ours as well, when I talked with them was that, well, we saw impacts, we saw projects arising trying to impact Net Promoter Score. Net Promoter Score was quantified by telephone calls. So you get a follow-up call and on a 11 star rating scale, like how satisfied were you with our service? So as a trigger point, they always ask like, please give us the highest rating. And they actually verbally said that. Like when I cashed out, when I paid and left, they told me, please give us the highest rating because our bonus depend on that. How horrible is that customer experience now? So anytime when you measure customer experience, you're impacting actually the customer experience and probably to the worse. So instead of that, think rather about less about focusing only on KPIs and more about real research data and a mix of data.
Yeah, I can add to that, Mark, too. I think just there's a lot of industry standard CX measures, and NPS is a great one, meaning very widely used and not always widely understood. So you want to make sure that whatever measures you are adopting, A, that they look at things from many different angles, but that they're relevant. And it seems obvious to say, but my little story here is in the province I live in Canada, our car insurance is privatized. It's public. It's owned by the government. So when you go to buy car insurance, you have one choice. And they chose to measure customer experience with NPS, which meant I got phone calls saying, how likely are you to recommend our organization? And I thought, what does that even mean? No one has a choice. So it felt very irrelevant and weird. And I didn't even know how to answer their questions. And it really, you know, had a negative effect on how I saw them as an organization, because I felt like they didn't know what they were doing.
Right.
So it was very strange. Okay.
Perfect. We actually got some questions.
We sure do. So I'm going to start at the top here. Mark, when you have different journeys, do you need to plan them in advance? This is from Alberto.
Again, it depends on the use case of your journey. If you use them within a project, probably not, because the project actually drives the kind of map that you need. Think about the difference of current state and future state. So probably in the project, you start with mapping out, hopefully based on your research, how the experience looks like right now. And you might need another map, which is like focusing on the higher zoom level. So at least always go up one zoom level to understand where this experience is embedded on a larger scale. But then you rather focus on future state journey mapping, which helps you to prototype and communicate prototypes and so on. When you start doing the management maps, you often already have a repository of these project maps that you can drive on. So you can build on what you have and you start connecting them. And that is then depending on the complexity of your service, also how many different products or different services do you have. You might have completely different sets of journey maps if you have completely separated services. And then depends on how many different personas do you have. So how many different customer segments do you have? You might need in one Zoom level, particularly for the lower, more zoomed in level, you might need several journey maps showing the difference between different customer segments, different personas, for example. But you don't need to plan ahead all of that. What I recommend to plan ahead is how you name maps. Thinking about the different Zoom levels, try to build a consistent language around that. That will help you later on. Otherwise, you will end up in a huge mess of journey maps that you first need to bring in order.
Okay. I'm going to go to email, Mark. We got a couple questions in advance today from Nina. I have never used customer journey mapping software. What are the benefits and what are the downsides? And kind of combined in that, how can I convince the company I'm working for to get started with journey mapping software?
Yeah, I'll keep that very brief. But going back to the three kinds of journey maps, the workshop maps, I not recommend to use any software there. I recommend to work with pen and paper there, post-its and a wall. If you have input, like if you already have a journey map, that's great, but then please print it out, hang it up at the wall. It's so much better to work with pen and paper. As soon as you go into projects, so where a journey map lives on for a longer time, for a couple of weeks, then it makes sense to digitize it and use a software because it speeds up and it helps you to do changes and so on. If you move into management maps, that's definitely where you need a software because it doesn't work without it. You can't do that with pen and paper. You need to connect it to live data like KPIs and so on. And that only works with a digital solution. I would leave it like there because in the next webinar, we focus on journey map ops. And I think that shows clearly way more benefits if you use it as a management map.
Okay. We have a question from Beta. Hope I pronounced that properly. I'd like a more detailed description of third level maps. I usually meet level zero, so the framework, and level two, the end-to-end journey or journey specific for channel or product. But what is that third level or micro journey exactly?
So it can be even more, like you can drill down even more. It might be not only a third level, but maybe even a fourth level or a fifth level. The difference is basically the time. Let's do an example of a bank. As a bank, you have different products, different services. So you have different set of maps. Let's say we focus on mortgages, a mortgage for a house. It's time span, at least in my flat, I'm paying for it for 30 years. So the highest level map for mortgages would be a 30-year map. Obviously, you cannot do a lot of details there, but you get a big overview. Then you can zoom into one step. What is a step on a high-level journey map becomes a whole journey when you zoom in. So highest level 30 years, you zoom into maybe the first year. The first year is a rather complex year because you need to buy your house, which is a huge experience in its own. You need to negotiate probably with different banks and you negotiate the interest fee and so on. Maybe the time frame there is 1 year. But then you can pick one of these and zoom in even further. And that would be the third level, or in your example, even already the level four, when you zoom into a certain day, and that might be just a conversation, that 1 hour conversation that you have with your bank supervisor, where you actually make the deal, where you sign the contract. It's a very emotional moment. And then maybe you can even zoom in further and focus exactly on this moment. What do you do when the customer actually signs the contract? How do you make this moment a very special moment for the customer? Because they actually just signed a contract for 30 years with you. how can you do that? So you jump between these different Zoom levels. And I think the time span is what really makes a difference between these.
Mm. Mark, a related question is, when you're building that hierarchy, do you generally start at the high level and then zoom in, or start with a small process and then start to zoom out? Do you have any best practice suggestions around that?
Yes, start with what you have. So if you already have done some projects and you have some maps based on research, use these. So maybe you think about, if you have different maps in project, they're probably not the highest level, they are one or two levels below. Think about, how can you connect them? So what is the higher level that actually connects the existing journey? If you start with a blank field, with a blank canvas, start with the highest level one. Then I would really recommend to start with the top level journey. And sometimes organizations like to start with asking, okay, where do we actually then start with our first project? Well, do research on your highest level, identifying the pain points on your highest level. Maybe look into the data from your call centers. Where do you get the most complaints from? Where do you get the most shared complaints on social media? Talk to your marketing team. Where do you have the most costly issues? Talk to your legal team. Where do you have the most costly internal things? So talk about operations, talk with your IT folks. Based on that, try to find the one moment where you say, okay, this is actually which we need to understand more in detail. And then you can zoom in and create the lower level map, the more detailed level of that experience, to understand what exactly are the pain points we're having in this field. And that then helps you to prioritize there. So two different approaches. First one is, start with what you have. If you have journey maps, built from there. If you don't, start from top.
Okay, great answer. All right. So moving on to a little bit of a different aspect, do you have any advice on how to recruit participants for customer or user research?